Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, welcome. This is Yah Elohim. We're starting the Community Love Power Show, starting off with a technical glitch on getting the audio to come up, but we will continue to work with it, and this is all part of coming back into it. So it's as soon as it comes up, we'll be able to hear it. But this is welcome, and for coming. What we're going to be doing for the new series, and just to give an intro to the Community Love Power Show, this is the reincarnation, about the third, fourth, or fifth reincarnation of dimensional healing. Okay, doesn't seem like it's playing properly though. Got a little audio happening, but it's not playing properly. Let's try another audio.
Forward and
Okay, so we were able to work through the technical glitch and play the Bunny Wailer tune, Bright Soul. So this is a Community Love Power show, and I am Yah Elohim. It's really the Community Love Power experience. And this is our first broadcast of 2019. And what we're going to be doing for the next several issues, which would be Monday night at 8, we're going to look at the connection between mental health, emotional literacy, and our overall well-being. Mental health, or lack of mental health, has a stigma in our communities, which prevents us from having the conversations and, even more importantly, taking the actions that are necessary to support ourselves and our family. And because of increasing emotional stress and the PTSD, the economic pressure and racial tensions and many other issues that we are facing as a society, these mental health issues and mental health disorders are increasing. And further to that increase of mental health disorders, our emotional literacy, our ability to address and heal these issues, is a skill that has to be developed. And these are skills that we have to teach ourselves. We have to organize and mobilize ourselves to provide what it is that we need in our communities, in our families, and in, most important, our personal lives. So that's the focus. And we're going to start with looking at why, why we do spend a lot of time avoiding just really dealing with our internal situation. So, I'm going to bring up a bookmark, and it's really all about the helpful messengers. There's a lot of, when we start to talk about solutions, there are a lot of programs and methods that can be used to help us develop emotional literacy. But we want to start with asking ourselves why many of us are uncomfortable with feeling what we feel. And so instead of feeling what we feel, we distract ourselves. We focus our energy on someone else's stuff, or we numb ourselves with various addictions and substances, or work too hard, or TV, or whatever addiction, whatever thing that we can get use to stay out of feeling what's going on within. When we feel that we don't have the ability to change what we're feeling, the circumstance around what we're feeling, our self-defense mechanism will push those feelings down inside instead of allowing them to come out to show us what they're telling us. So this creates a disease state. It creates huge amounts of stress in our body because it's resistance, and we're resisting the natural impulse to express ourselves, and we push that energy back down inside of us. That's the hypertension, PTSD, the various diagnoses. Then sometimes we might blow off a little steam and vent or dump on someone our pain. It's like letting off a pressure valve. It helps a little, but it does not solve the situation, and the pressure is going to build back up, and we're going to be in the same situation. So this ego, it works hard to keep us out of focusing on the present, and it wants to focus on the past and the future to keep us away from feeling the now, where we can feel what we're feeling in those moments, where the ego can't protect us in the now. So many of our physical and mental health issues can manifest from this tug of war that's going on within us, moving our ego up and then pushing it back down.
And so that creates an enormous amount of stress and tension, as we were saying. And when we look at solutions, we have to look for strategies and ways to move past the stress and the tension. So if we're feeling what we consider to be negative emotions, that's usually telling us that something isn't working for us, or in some kind of way, whether we're not receiving something that is important to us, or we're receiving something that doesn't work for us. So it's about setting those boundaries. When the early stage of life, we encountered a lot of situations that were tied to not getting those needs met, and those situations were painful. And so what happens is the ego creates a state where we're not feeling good enough, and that becomes our internal conversation. On and on is what we carry within, and is the core dialogue that prevents that communication from then coming out. So it's a lot of words. What it's really saying is that the ego is protecting us, so-called, or protecting itself, really, from us focusing on the now and being able to speak forward what is happening in the now. And so that sets up all kind of challenges and lack of communication, and then we vent instead of, you know, being able to actually deal with what's happening in the moment. And so as we look at the topic of mental wellness, and we look at all the different ways that we can approach our mental well-being, there's a whole gamut of ways that people have used throughout millennia. And one of those ways are what we call the entheogens. And the entheogens is just another name for psychedelics, the plants or substances that are produced by nature that allow you or one to go within to a different state of consciousness. Some people that use those substances allude to the fact that they are helpful in their healing and in their well-being. So what we want to do is actually explore that. If I can keep losing the page for that. So let me go back to that page again. And we want to explore how some scientists and researchers are looking at the possibility of using the entheogenic plants as a means of dealing with mental illness or mental health challenges. So let's explore that for just a moment.
Most of us know at least one person struggling with depression or anxiety. It might be a friend or family member, and you probably want them to get all the help that they can. What you might not know is that one of the best things you can do to help people suffering from these conditions is to ask the government to reclassify psilocybin, the psychedelic ingredient of magic mushrooms. This will make it easier for doctors like me to test it as a treatment. We need to find new treatments because studies show that existing medications don't work well for up to half of those suffering from depression and anxiety. Millions of people in the United Kingdom need more effective treatment options as soon as possible. Preliminary studies, like the ones I've been involved with at King's College London and Imperial College London, suggest that psilocybin can help many patients who haven't benefited from the standard treatments get back to feeling their usual selves. And whilst many standard treatments involve taking a drug every day, psilocybin therapy involves just a few day-long sessions with no ongoing medication. It seems psilocybin could bring hope and relief to many patients, including some who have been suffering for years. Unfortunately, psilocybin is currently classified as a Schedule 1 substance by the UK government. This means it cannot be prescribed by doctors outside of licensed studies and makes conducting research with psilocybin much more time-consuming and expensive relative to other drugs. By reclassifying psilocybin to Schedule 2, research would become easier and cheaper so that people can benefit from this treatment sooner. You might be worried about the safety of psilocybin, but studies of people who use psilocybin mushrooms have repeatedly found that they are remarkably safe relative to other commonly used recreational and medical drugs. Psilocybin is not toxic to the body, not addictive, and does not adversely affect long-term mental health when used responsibly. Indeed, it may improve it. Click the link to learn more and sign the petition so that people suffering from depression and anxiety get the help they need.
Okay, so psilocybin or the mushroom is one entheogenic plant or one entheogen, the basis of the word theology is in it. And essentially these plants are purported to be plants or substances, are purported to be friends of us, of the people, that then allow us to move past some mental, physical disorders by moving into other states of consciousness. So these substances are purported to be successful in helping some people move past mental illness and, I would say, mental health, I would say, towards greater mental well-being. And the really great thing that they say is that they're not addictive, and it's not something that you take on a continual basis. One, two, or three times in a year, two or three, is more than enough. It's when you reach the stage where you want to explore again some issues that may be of importance. Another substance is the iboga and the ibogaine. The ibogaine is known to help with interrupting substance abuse disorders. So backing up just a little bit, in 2010, the WHO stated that by 2020, depression will be the second largest global health and healthcare costs. And then other disorders like anxiety, post-traumatic stress, social anxiety disorder affect growing, increasing parts of the population. So the evidence is showing that ibogaine can help improve depression, anxiety, OCD, and other quality of life indicators. Ibogaine therapy has shown success in treating conditions based on several factors, and it is helpful in people who have had very difficult experiences to be able to view them in a more objective way. It has been demonstrated to help with the uptake of neurotransmitters that restore a level of balance to the brain, and it protects dopamine receptors. So this is another substance. So let's take notes, because what we're going to do on this first episode, we're just looking over various solutions. Subsequent episodes will have guests, and we will also look at the solutions in more depth so that we have enough information to see if this is a choice, to be able to discern if this is a choice that is in our best interest. A lot of this information, I am moved to say, is for posterity. It will be a collection or compilation of work that we have done over our lifetime. And these will become a library of resources for the next and subsequent generations, as well as the present generation. So we are going to look more at the entheogens in one program, the psychedelics, the ibogaine, and whatever other ones that we can look into, maybe ayahuasca and sage, the diviner sage. So there are different plants or natural substances that exist in nature, and what it is for us to do is discern if these are useful or helpful tools, or if they are actually a distraction. So evil gain is something that we can definitely look into. Another thing that's important is our children and the way that our children are having increasing amount of mental and mood disorders. And the treatment of choice is to give them medication. And it's debatable about the effectiveness of the medication. It is, let's say this, it's not debatable about if it works, because it does work for many and probably for most in subsiding the acute symptoms, just like medication for a physical disorder. In the long term, if we're not dealing with the cause of the disorder, wherever it resides, we're not actually healing. We are suppressing. And what's suppressed is going to come out somewhere else. This program is going to have a little bit of profanity in it, because I'm playing information that has profanity in it. We're going to look at a clip, short clip here, about drugs for kids, as it's called, drugging our children, and then come back and have a little conversation about that.
You're getting calls from his teacher. He's talking when he's supposed to be quiet and moving around when he's supposed to be sitting still.
Focusing on homework can be a real challenge.
And sometimes they can be just plain annoying.
If so, your child may have a condition known as being a child.
Having a child who's a child can be a real challenge.
I should know. I got two of them. Girls!
But now, we know we have options.
Drugs.
Drugs.
My doctor recommended drugs.
If your child is experiencing symptoms such as talking and shouting, playing and laughing, or has trouble focusing on things that are boring, drugs may provide relief.
In studies, drugs have been shown to improve kids' ability to focus on boring stuff, reduce inappropriate playing and talking, and make them generally less annoying.
Aren't drugs only for kids with serious attention and hyperactivity disorders?
No.
Nearly 7 out of every 7 children act like children.
Putting our child on drugs turned out to be the best decision. Isn't that right, Timmy?
Yes, Mother.
Drugs are not for everyone, especially children who do not play, laugh, shout, or cry. In some cases, certain side effects have been reported, including personality changes, addiction, and billions in revenue for pharmaceutical companies. Giving your child drugs may also distract you from the root causes of your child's focusing issues, including overexposure to electronic media, poor diet, lack of exercise, and systemic problems with our educational system.
He only has recess 15 minutes a day and PE once a week, but it's not a problem anymore.
You spend 7 hours a day in a 20 by 20 foot room with 30 other children, and then they come home and do test prep.
We just want to have happy, high-functioning children who know how to sit down and shut the fuck up.
And now we know how.
Medicate the fuck out of them.
So we get the point. Of course, it was irony and sarcasm, but there's a good point there, and point well taken. It is so much easier to medicate, to drug, than to actually deal with the issues. And with the busy lives everyone has, what can you say? There's some blame conversation around that. People have to make the decisions that they have to make. But then there's got to be somewhere that takes us beyond the drugs. Okay, they take the drugs and they achieve a semblance of balance where we can now look at other approaches and other remedies. So this is where we are looking at the drugs. And so moving on past that, as we deal with all of the various solutions, because tonight we're just touching on different things that we can do in terms of our mental health. I see one of my invited co-hosts came in. Let me see if I can open up the line. Let's see if I can do that. This thing is kind of glitching first night, but I think I got it. Hi, my sister. I got you.
Greetings.
How are you? I know you're in the middle of doing no, you're in perfect time. Actually, this is the good time to, we just wanted to have a brief conversation because I know it's late for many of us or we've been busy. But what we've been talking about, and I should introduce, this is my friend Charmaine. She's always like one of my biggest supporters, and I can call her at the last minute, like 45 minutes ago, and ask her to dial into a program, and she does it. So I really appreciate that because it's the middle of her day where she's at. And so, you know, I wanted to not take up too much of her time. But what we've been talking about essentially and listening to various clips, I don't know where you came in, if you came in on the drugs for kids part, where we were exploring a very, really a sarcastic clip that was basically saying, if your child is being a child, go ahead and drug the bleep out of them so that they can be more manageable for your busy life. But the overall topic is really our emotional literacy and our ability to be even to be able to articulate what's going on with us. And as a person who has done many events and work with people over the years, what do you see as why is it that it's sometimes very much a challenge for us to just express ourselves?
Well, the first thing I would say is that we're in this generation of we want everything instantaneously. You know, there's fast food, not slow food. There's a fast lane, not the slow lane. Everything in our life, and even physical wellness, there's a gratification of having it now. And that goes into physical health as well as mental. Rather than saying, or the example with the diet, rather than finding a way to lose the weight, let's take a pill and get it off, whereas a pill didn't put it on. You know, with mental health, let's go ahead and let's just take a drug that will make us feel better. And the feel better only masks the feelings. And I think we're in a society now where it's easy to mask the feelings than be our authentic self. And I think it takes really getting in touch deep in your soul with who you are and what you want and be willing to do what it takes to be authentic. And if that means it's a longer road and no drugs, if that means we can't have it today, that means we might have to wait a week, 2 weeks, a year and a half. We have to be willing to take that journey to get back to wholeness. And I just see it that we just want, everyone wants to take the shortcut. Whatever the shortcut is, I want to take the shortcut. Unfortunately, the shortcut, when you miss a step, you end up starting all over. When you miss a step, you miss the ingredients that can help have you be healthy and whole sooner than taking the medication and that diversion to come back to find out it really didn't work.
Indeed. So then what are some of the tools that you know of that work successfully in order to be able to develop the capability, the capacity to even have a voice and be comfortable with the voice of others?
Number one would be meditation. finding the time to go within, to really discover who you are. Back to this instant society, it's also a very noisy society. No one takes time to listen to themselves. Music is loud, TV is loud, you know, and sometimes you need to turn off all of that and find the time, like it says, be still, to just be still and know. And in the end, we have to get comfortable with self, and we can't get comfortable with self with all the distractions of, you know, running here and there and listening to the TV and watching and being on our phone. I'm guilty, being on our phone 20 hours a day. I mean, all of that. It takes a lot to decide to say no to all the drama and yes to ourselves. And that yes begins with finding a few moments every day. And, of course, I'm preaching to the choir here, a few minutes every day where we can just be silent. Whatever that means to you, out in nature, sitting, finding a book, you know, but don't make it busy. Just really simply finding time to go within. Because as you've always said to me, we have all the answers inside. We have all the answers inside. But unfortunately, we drown them out because we don't take time to listen to ourselves, to our souls, to our intuition. All the answers are there, and that would be the first step. And if you can't do a meditation by yourself, find a group of like-minded people that you can begin to do a meditation with until you can do it on your own. But learning to be with self is, I think, the first step and the first ingredient.
Yes, indeed. And that self-comfort, as you say, it's wherever we can find it. It's within us, but that quiet is so important for us to be able to just breathe, connect with our breath as we do sometime on our circles of resilience. We start off by just simply connecting with our breath. That can't be taken away from us, and it's always within. And as we focus on our breath, our breathing slows down, our stress level decreases, and it's automatic. It doesn't cost anything but focus. So I'm so glad that you brought up the whole idea of meditation, because it is very important. What about the decisions that we make in terms of our milieu, or those that are around us, those people we choose to be in relationships with? How does that reflect? Does that reflect where we are internally, what we need, or does it reflect nothing at all?
I think it's a combination of both. I made a big decision a year ago that there was a circle of friends that I just couldn't be around anymore. And I made that decision because a part of me felt like when I was there, it was good because I was always serving. Okay? But when it came time for the support I needed, nobody was around. I'm thinking that's quite interesting.
Yeah.
We have the other side of family that we have to be around and support. And something that you always say is that if we put that ingredient of love in wherever we are, we look at the relationships through a different lens. Love changes the lens in which we look at those around us and whatever else. Not to be judgmental, you know, because we learn more and more to say yes to ourselves and no to the drama and the people and whatever else. But when we put love in the equation, I think we can take a step back and be there but not be a part of it, especially with family. Sometimes with family, we do have to take that step back. With outside friends and relationships, sometimes you have to let them go because they say your circle of friends really reflects where your consciousness is, you know, so that if you're around people that gossip all the time, what does that say about you? If you're around people that, you know, indulge in things that aren't a part of who you are, what does that say about you? Not to judge them, but you know that's not a circle where you can thrive and step into your highest self. And I think all of us on this journey, we want to be the best of who we are. And we have to have an environment that fosters that. And if not, we have to step away, because you can't find your wholeness when you're with a group that is dealing with bits and pieces, you know, with lack of self-esteem, lack of knowing who they are. You can't find yourself in that kind of group. You have to be in a group that whatever they do, they raise your level. And I say this, you do that for me all the time. I try my best to do that for you. This is a circle of friends that you want to elevate your consciousness. And so you, with love, you look at things in relationship through a different lens, and you can be able to love, and you can sometimes step back from it.
And then that brings to mind, brings to heart the situation, because we were just speaking of family, the situation where family is having major drama, our child, our parents, our siblings, and how do we and then maintain our balance, because we are then caught up in what's happening with that close family member, and it we cannot distance ourselves from it in a physical way because it is the proximity of our immediate family. How do you get that balance?
Wow. Well, what I'm finding is, because you know my life now with caretaking for a mother and a sister right now, is that I truly have to make time. And I found, and this was one of the secrets I found the other night, everybody goes to bed early. So I'm deciding I'm not going to bed early. I'm going to find those hours at night when it's quiet and everybody's asleep, then I can have some time for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I can't breathe, nobody else can breathe. If I don't put, and it's so funny because I'm telling you, I find myself being such a hypocrite sometimes, because in my workshop, I give the example, when you're on the plane, it says put on your oxygen mask. It doesn't say run around the plane and put an oxygen mask on everybody else, and then maybe you'll have some, right? So
right.
I'm learning that we have to be my own best medicine and take my advice and say, I've got to breathe, because if I don't breathe, then I cannot support anybody else. If I'm not healthy, then I can't look out for anybody else. And as a caretaker, it is so hard for us to do that. You know, it's so hard. But at some point, there's 24 hours in a day. My God, you got to find some time for yourself. You have to find some time for yourself.
And that is, you know, that is actually the crux of it, is that being able to balance that for you, you know, for you and the person you're providing care for. So I know, you know, I don't want to hold you too long because I know you're in the middle of doing something. I just wanted to get a little input from you. But tell us what you're working on right now before I let you go, and, you know, in terms of yourself and your project.
Well, I think I shared with you that I just got that tool, the Kanzawan. So I'm trying to get a massage routine going. I'm actually trying to find an Ayurvedic practitioner that can help me, that we can do some kind of exchange where we can do exchange massage. That's what I'm looking for. That's number one. And I'm thinking about making a big change in my diet. You know, I was strict vegetarian for a long time. I was strict vegan. And I think it's been 8 years now. I put fish and chicken back in my diet. And I'm thinking about making a major change in my diet. And so we'll see how all that goes. But those are things I'm doing right now. And one of my stress releases is that I do coloring books now.
Yes, aren't they nice? I bring them to the events. Yeah. I bring those to events so people can do that.
Yeah.
It is very nice. And I really appreciate you, you know, coming in at the spur of the moment to share your perspective and your love. And I hope you come back again soon. Charmaine is part of our service of resilience that we have. We do a Wednesday call. We work on projects and we support each other. So I really appreciate you. I'm going to take you off live, and if you want to continue to listen, please do so.
Enjoy. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Love you to life.
Love you to life.
So that was my dear long lifetime friend Charmaine, and I'm so glad that she was able to join us. And so as we move talking about solutions for the different issues that we're exploring this evening, emotional literacy and mental health, what we're doing is just tapping on a few topics that we will go further detail as the program progress, and I'm calling it experience, as the experience progress in subsequent weeks. So now we actually want to look at the start to look at the solutions, just to touch on them again. So we looked at psilocybin, we looked at self-care, meditation, and breath and movement, breathing, focus on breathing, moving away from the drugs, etc. Now, we want to take a moment and look at this solutions, some viable solutions. One organization that we found, and one thing that we actually want to look at, is what is healing? When we're talking about healing and social justice in our communities, can we separate healing from justice?
I strongly feel that movements for social justice, nonprofit organizations, community-based organizations, need to include healing justice and mental health into their work. I think we have seen the consequences of what happens when that is not considered in our work, when we don't have succinct structures and policies in place to support people, or also to even hold boundaries with people, right? I believe that that is necessary because when we're in this state of distress, which we are in as Black people in this country, and then we're in these heightened states of distress because of someone's been killed in our community or someone has been assaulted in our community, that in those moments, if we don't have a plan, an understanding of how trauma works and how we can intervene and support folks and hold people accountable or help us all be held accountable, then we lose. We lose time. We lose energy. We lose our movement. And we need to see that, like, whatever gets in the way of the work is actually the work.
It is really important that we do pay attention to the intersections of social justice and mental health. Some of the, you know, not only are there stigmas and misconceptions that keep people from getting the help that they need, but there's also just huge, like, financial disparities, economic disparities that make it so that people who even need help can't have it, don't have access to it, or, you know, even more specifically, don't have access to mental health professionals that look like them or that are conscious of their lived experiences or respectful of their lived experiences. You know, so making sure that these services remain attainable for all and that they are, you know, openly accessible. You don't have to go, you know, on a scavenger hunt to be able to get connected to a therapist is what it feels like sometimes, particularly someone who's going to be respectful of your life and your culture and your background and, you know, microaggressions and, you know, that you don't have to explain the very basic fundamental things about your humanity to before you can even get to the healing.
And I know when it comes to social justice activism, I've found that in just my friendships with my friends who are activists, that they have been called into the work because of particular trauma that they have experienced, but are not doing the work on their trauma. And so what it means is, as social activists, to be mindful that activism starts with self first, and then it is an outpouring of that. So that healing, recognizing that we're whole, complete, and lacking nothing, feeds into how we strategize when it comes to activism work. And so I think that we can be more effective if we become clear that it starts here first, and then the outpouring happens when we do the work out in the world.
You can't separate oppression from mental health. You can't separate racism and sexism and misogyny noir or ableism from mental health and healing.
And so that's actually just another way of saying the same thing. We have to take care of ourselves first. Whatever it is that we're doing in the world, whatever it is that we feel is our calling, our responsibility, our passion, and our inspiration, it's so important for us to take care of ourselves first. And it sounds easy. It's easy for me to say the words, but to develop that priority, to know that it's utmost important in being supportive and to be able to move past stigma and lack of communication, is about dealing with ourselves first. Another thing we want to look at is internalized racism. Internalized racism has a lot to do with our inability to communicate with ourselves, with our feelings, and to be literate about what's happening internally. It happens, internalized racism occurs, or it happens when people are overwhelmed by messages, attitudes, and behaviors. So you can tend to shut down emotionally and lose your voice because you don't feel like you're being heard and no one actually represents you or what you feel is important to you. So then we start to internalize negative stereotypes of ourselves, which then impedes our connection with others. We might think of ourselves or others as stupid, lazy, unimportant, inferior. It makes us hypercritical and verbally attack each other. It makes us physically attack each other, kill each other. And we play out our rage on each other. It puts, again, our individual well-being at the bottom of the pile. It makes it difficult for us to think about our physical and emotional health, which makes us vulnerable to disease. It causes us to criticize our children, hypercritical again, with our children in efforts to discipline them and keep them from being overly and openly expressive. It makes us feel hopeless, sometimes angry. It has made the various groups fight with each other, racial groups and within the groups, disconnected from each other, divide each other by external factors, skin, hair, gender. So all of these things are part of the healing process and have to come into part of the conversation in order for us to be able to actually access the healing modality that we need. That's essential for us to be able to move forward. We're going to look at a little bit more at this organization. It's called Black Emotional, I forget what it's called, but it's BEAM, Black Emotional and Mental Health Collective. They do trainings.
My name is Yolo Akili Robinson. I am the executive director of BEAM, the Black Emotional and Mental Health Collective.
BEAM is a national training and technical assistance organization. We train individuals, organizations, and grassroots movements on how to implement healing justice and social justice-informed mental health strategies into their work. BEAM is built on the premise that we just can't rely on mental health workers to help our communities heal. We need to also build up the mental health literacy and healing education of everyone in our communities, and that this will help us support ourselves, each other, and get us connected to the care that we need.
Beam's work is important to me because I have seen what happens in our communities when we don't focus on healing justice and mental health. I've seen it in the context of the HIV/AIDS pandemic. I've seen it in the context of substance use challenges in our community. I've seen it in the context of domestic violence, all these different pieces. And for me, as a member of the community, as someone who's been impacted by that lack of awareness of those issues, I've suffered, and I've also watched people around me suffer. And I realized that as I got further into my work and my career, that some of this was unnecessary. Some of this was because we didn't have the skills and the tools to understand that things could be different, that we could create community organizing spaces differently, that we could structure programs and systems differently.
But Beam's work is to improve Black people's mental health literacy and access to mental and emotional health care and support. And that can't happen in a vacuum. We need more visible and supported pathways for Black people to enter into the mental health profession.
So Beam's work helps to dismantle and give tools to folks across platforms, right? So it's across, it's professional, it's leadership, it is directly in the community, and then very specifically, it's also addressing some of the issues that Black men have.
During slavery, showing signs of depression or anxiety or other mental illness often resulted in beating or other abuse, and that forced many slaves to hide the issues that they were experiencing. And over time, strength became equated with survival and weakness, weakness like mental illness, right? And that meant that you might not survive. And that stigma still exists today.
I learned that Black mental health, the issues though are different than other populations. Things like masculinity or femininity or, you know, like the transgender population, those intersect with mental health differently than they do with the rest of the population. And so therefore you need to develop unique tools to address them.
I don't care if you're an organizer, if you're an advocate, if you're a politician, if you're a teacher, you're an educator, our tools and trainings are saying whatever space you are in, you can take these pieces into that space and help alleviate harm. It's about giving our communities the skills that we need to be able to support and heal ourselves. That's at the core of what Beam is about.
And actually, I think he said it quite well. And so this organization is something to look into, because what they do is they do training for grassroots community, just the regular people. It's not about being a professional per se, but if you interact with people, it gives you the tools and the skills to be able to do so. And there are other solutions. There's the feelings as messenger piece that the Afia and Wekesa Mwazimoyo at Aya Educational Institute, as well as How, Healing Oppression's Wounds, which is another really great program or experience that are put together by Afia and Wekesa Mwazimoyo. Just Google Aya Educational Institute and you'll see those programs. Those are other really good trainings that we can use, because when we're dealing with our people, which is other people, meaning the people that are in our lives, there are tools and skills that is important to be able to develop, and we don't learn that in the typical educational institution. That is part of what we used to learn as rites of passage, as manhood or womanhood training, that is not very popular, even though there was a surge many years ago of that, but it's not as popular or as required, because it was a time when you went through that in order to be able to know some of the things that you needed to know in order to step into the next role that you're taking in life. So again, this is a big part of the disjointment that we're experiencing, and now we have to bring it back together. So we are the grandmothers, the grandfathers, the mothers, the fathers, the children, sisters, brothers, nieces, and nephews, aunts and uncles, grandmothers and grandfathers and grandchildren, all coming together in order to heal ourselves and heal our community, heal our lives by making better choices with more information and, most important, more love. So that's what we have to offer. This is where, in the last few minutes of the program, you get to ask your wellness question. It doesn't have to have anything to do with the topic of the experience for today. It could just be a wellness question that you have at random. Because this is the first night and the marketing for this program is just starting, there may not be a wellness question for tonight. So I'm just going to pick something up at random and talk about it. Totally at random. And that is why it's important to play. So the wellness topic for this evening is why it is important to play. Well, it shouldn't be necessary to explain why it's important to play, but we will say that because of the increase of digital devices and everything in a rigid schedule for everyone, it's important to come out of that rigid schedule as part of your work, which is to play. So, for example, make it as important to play as it is to work. Unstructured play with no boundaries balances out the structure that our lives have. Get away from the devices. At first, it may be uncomfortable, but then we start to open up our senses again that have been shut down by the devices. And we don't want to encourage or feel like everything is competition, which is an underlying, from my perspective, sense of lack. What we want to do is cooperation and work together. Have fun through cooperation. And that spills over into the rest of our lives, including our business. Get to know the leadership aspect of yourself. Everyone is a leader in something. So explore, get to know yourself to know what you lead in. A lead doesn't mean you have people necessarily trailing behind you. It could be something that you're very good at and you take that on as part of how you express. All of this is about developing emotional literacy. Back to the original topic. And the other thing is, allow yourself to work without someone else's supervision or direction about what it is you're supposed to do. Develop those talents and skills from within that you need to develop. And then also realize that there are experts and jagnas and mentors that have more skill than we do. So again, it's about discernment and balance. So that's the hot topic for today, picked at random. And we're at the top of the hour. This is a 1 hour experience. So we are going to exit with a song. And as we leave, we want to say thank you for coming to the Community Love Power very first broadcast of 2019. We're a little late, but we did get it done. Thanks. Peace.
gonna